So we are actually going to hear this story from the Gospel of John one more time. It's actually more of an interpretation of the story. This is a reading from the Gospel of John by Rowan Atkinson.
Our lesson this evening is taken from the Gospel according to St. John, chapter 2, beginning at the first verse. And on the third day, there was a marriage in Cana of Galilee. And it came to pass that all the wine was drunk. And the mother of Jesus said unto the Lord, they have no more wine. And Jesus said unto the servants, fill 6 water pots with water. And they did so. And when the steward of the feast did taste of the water from the pots, it had become wine. And he knew not whence it had come. But the servants did know. And they applauded loudly in the kitchen. And they said unto the Lord, how the hell did you do that? And inquired of him, do you do children's parties? And the Lord said, no. But the servants did press him, saying, go on, give us another one. And so he brought forth a carrot and said, behold this, for it is a carrot. And all about him knew that it was so, for it was orange, with a green top. And he did place a large red cloth over the carrot, and then removed it, and lo, he held in his hand a white rabbit. And all were amazed, and said, this guy is really good.
So I'm not playing you this sketch just for giggles. Like most things that are really funny, this sketch is funny because it hits on something that feels like it might possibly be true, and the truth of it scares us a little bit. When you think about it, doesn't turning water into wine seem a little bit like a cheap parlor trick? Especially when you're the Son of God? There is something about it that makes me expect Jesus to take out a wand next. And if Jesus' first sign is a magic trick, is that really something we can believe in? As it turns out, magicians were rampant in the first century. Just like traveling salesmen who peddled potions and remedies from their carts, promising healing from whatever ails you, ancient Israel was full of traveling prophets, itinerant preachers who came to town, performed miracles and healed the sick, then moved on to the next place just before the jig was up. Anyone who taught or prophesied in Israel was up against a tough crowd of weary and suspicious folks who had seen everything you can do with sleight of hand and a couple of mirrors. After Jesus' death, the rumors persisted that perhaps this whole thing was just some kind of elaborate hoax, an act, staged by a bunch of disciples who just couldn't believe that their Messiah wasn't the real deal. That's why we get such careful descriptions of the last hours of Jesus' life and his burial in the gospel accounts. The writers want their readers to be absolutely sure that the tomb was closed and sealed, and that nobody was running around the countryside with Jesus' body. Maybe the story is easier to believe if we do think that it's magic. Later in the first century, certain Gnostic Christians were Docetists, who believed that Jesus' body wasn't actually real, but an illusion, sort of like a hologram. He seemed real, walking and talking, but wasn't actually physically human and only appeared to suffer and die on the cross. This idea was later branded heretical, but isn't there something about it that's appealing? less messy than a God who dwells with us in the flesh, who suffers and dies? Maybe it was just an illusion. I am familiar with living under illusions, and perhaps you are too. One illusion I lived under for quite some time was particularly convincing. It was called the, if I don't look at it, it will go away illusion. And there was another one that was great that I remember from a while back, and it was called the, he really loves you, it's just hard for him to show it illusion. And that particular trick was generally followed closely by another crowd pleaser, the, it's been such a stressful time lately, I'm sure it will get better. And then finally, the big closer, the, I'm happy. No, really, I am. We can be pretty impressive masters of illusion ourselves. You may not have a trick deck or a white rabbit, but sometimes it can feel that way. At times, you can convince yourself of almost anything. At times, you can see only what you want to see. In fact, it's exactly the same technique used by the traveling salesman who comes through town, peddling his potions and claiming that he can heal the sick. He preys on desire. He knows that when someone wants something badly enough, they'll believe almost anything. Here is the reason Jesus is something more than a parlor magician. While you or I are able to stage elaborate illusions of our own, Jesus offers only the truth, but a different kind of truth than we've ever seen before. Stripped of my illusions, I tend to think that the only other option presented to me is a cold, hard reality, a harsh daylight that reveals everything as it truly is, all angles and edges. But with Christ, there is this strange thing, a third option, a third reality, God's reality. And in the Gospel of John, it is called life. And it's so hard to describe, so hard to fit into words, that we're forced to use stories and symbols and signs just to try and talk about it. It's bread, but when you eat it, you will never be hungry again. It's water, but when you drink it, you will never be thirsty again. It's light, but the true light, a light that darkness cannot overcome. It's like a wedding where you think the wine has run out, but then find that it hasn't. Find that there is wine in abundance, and it's sweeter and better than anything you have ever tasted. It's not an illusion, and it's not a mirage. It is truer than our reality, and realer than our dreams. It's not an escape, but an entrance. The stone has rolled away. The illusions are shattered. The smoke is banished, and the mirrors too. He has broken death open and made a new way toward truth and life.